and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Organizers in Chicago and across the country are planning May Day rallies to protest President Trump. What you should know.
This is not something that is unique to Streeterville or downtown.
A new proposal looks to rein in large teen gatherings. Our Spotlight Politics team unpacks that and much more. And local conservationists say a Trump administration proposal could upend protections for endangered species. What it could mean in Illinois. And now to some of today's top stories. Mourners paid their respects today to Fire Captain David Meyer, who died in the line of duty last week.
He was probably the hardest working person I'd ever met, but I don't really know if he ever worked a day in his life. I mean, he was an incredible carpenter, gifted. You know, he could build anything. And if there was a problem, they always looked at Dave, and Dave would just shrug his shoulders. Well, do you want me to fix it or no? And as far as the fire department was concerned, he was just going to a picnic with 14 of his best friends for the weekend. You know, I mean, it wasn't really like a job. And an old man told me one time, if you do something that you truly love, you never work a day in your life.
Meyer was 54 years old and served 29 years in the department. Many members of the fire department joined his wife and four children at today's service in Niles. A Chicago man is facing arson and murder charges for the fire that killed Meyer. More than two dozen states, including Illinois, are suing the Trump administration over funding cuts to AmeriCorps. The lawsuit alleges the administration illegally canceled grants and put 85% of the agency's workforce on leave without approval from Congress. The agency, focused on community service and volunteerism, was created more than 30 years ago. It's part of sweeping cuts the Trump administration has made through billionaire Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency. Neighbors near the Obama Center say they fear a proposed hotel tower will worsen already gentrifying conditions.
When you can fast-track a luxury hotel, but everyone around that hotel lives in blight, knowing that that'll raise the price to push them out, you're intentionally trying to gentrify a neighborhood, and that's what's happening here in Chicago.
Protesters stood on the lot near Island Terrace Apartments, urging the city to vote against a rezoning application that would allow a 26-story hotel to be built next to the apartment building and down the street from the Obama Center. The group, Southside Together, says tenants in another building across from the Obama Center are already living with mold, pests, and plumbing issues, and they fear a luxury hotel without a community benefits agreement will attract more developers and raise the cost of living. Up next, what to expect from an upcoming May Day rally in Chicago. And later in the program, our Spotlight Politics team on Mayor Johnson's visit to Springfield.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
As Governor J.B. Pritzker calls on Democrats to be more aggressive in their fight against the Trump administration, organizers in Chicago and across the nation are planning May Day rallies this Thursday. More than 1,100 protest events are scheduled in nearly 1,000 cities across the country. This comes on the heels of yesterday's presidential executive orders targeting sanctuary cities and ramping up immigration crackdowns. Joining us to discuss are three of the rally organizers: Laureen Targos, scientist for the EPA Great Lakes Region and executive vice president of the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 704. Omar Lopez is on the executive committee of the Immigrant Defense Resistance Council. He's also director of CALOR, a nonprofit providing HIV prevention services to the Latino community. And Jorge Mujica is a campaign organizer for Arise Chicago, which advocates for workers' rights. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. Jorge Mujica, let's start with you. Please tell us about what you all have planned for Thursday. What can folks expect to see?
Thursday, you're going to see the biggest protest in the city of Chicago in so many years, I think since 2006 when the immigrant community was under attack. Nowadays, it's not only the immigrant community, but us all communities, students, colleges, universities, federal workers, the environment, everybody's under attack by the administration. So you're going to be see resistance and pushing back that agenda.
What's happening that day? Can we expect a rally, a march, all of the above?
What's going to happen is we're going to be meeting at 11 a.m. at Union Park on Lake and Ashland. We're going to march towards downtown. We're going to cross downtown, and we're going to end the rally in the Petrillo Shell in Grand Park. And we are thinking about 250,000 people at least.
Okay. Lorene, you'll be speaking at Thursday's rally once it gets to that part of the city. What will you be speaking about?
I'll be raising the voices for the 1,000 EPA workers here in Chicago and the Great Lakes region who are fighting against the Trump regime's agenda to dismantle our ability to protect clean air and clean water for the American people.
What is your message to the people who will be there and to the Trump administration?
Our message is to our fellow workers. We're not alone. We have a lot of solidarity to build, and we know that right now our duty is to protect democracy. Federal workers, unlike other workforces, don't swear an oath to protect the Constitution from enemies foreign and domestic. We take that oath very seriously, especially right now as we're under attack. And we are stepping up to remind folks that when folks do come under attack, under an autocratic ruler, we know that our rights are strongest right now at the beginning of the attacks. As the attacks go on and on and on, if we don't fight back, we become weaker. And so we know what history has taught us. You know, federal workers haven't seen an attack like this before, but other workers in other countries have. So this is why it's International Workers' Day, and we're standing up together with the workers of the world to say no to fascism.
May 1st, as you just said, has become known as International Workers' Day, Omar. Do you see this as an opportunity to also defend immigrant rights?
Absolutely. We're saying that the immigration issue is a labor issue. We're saying that immigrants are not criminals, that they're workers. So I think it's becoming that we should come out on May 1st and observe the workers' rights and also the immigrants' rights. But I think that it has a lot more, you know, because we are, in essence, linking the immigrant struggle to the struggle of the rest of the workers around the nation, especially now under the attacks from the administration.
Lorene, you're still employed by the EPA, but many of your coworkers were laid off last week, in fact, on Earth Day. Does all of that make May Day, you know, does it take on a whole new meaning this year? Does it make it that much more significant?
Absolutely. Federal workers across different agencies beyond the Environmental Protection Agency are seeing attacks. You know, we saw NIOSH being dismantled, the department that investigates after every firefighter death in the workplace. That department has been removed already. We see Social Security Administration under attack. Every service that protects so many aspects of the quality of life and the economy in this country are being attacked. And so we're so empowered. The Federal Unionist Network is rising up to participate in May Day all over the country, and we're ready to fight along with our brothers and sisters and siblings all over the country.
How would you say morale is among you and your colleagues at the EPA right now?
Morale's been hard, but after, you know, 100 days of this, I see people ready to fight and ready to step into our power even more than ever.
Jorge, same question to you. Does May Day have greater significance this year, given what Lorene just talked about, but also what is happening to the immigrant community right now?
Absolutely, yes. The immigrant community has been a target of several administrations, not only Republicans, also Democrats. You know, ex-President Barack Obama was the deporter-in-chief. We don't want that. We don't like that. 5 years ago, we were the heroes of society. We were the essential workers. Now we are the criminals. Omar is making a fantastic point. We are international workers. We are simply workers coming to another country looking for jobs. That's who we are, and that's how we want to be recognized. If we fall into the discourse of being criminals, the society is going to repel us without understanding that we are the basic, the basis of the economy. We brought food from the fields to the doors of everybody during the pandemic. We are not going to let anybody forgetting that.
The president signed three new executive orders yesterday, cracking down on sanctuary cities and the immigrants. Omar, are you concerned that immigrant fears about the Trump administration and, you know, the ICE raids that we've been seeing and hearing about, that could impact turnout at the rally?
Well, you know, there's definitely fear in the community, and that's the idea that Trump administration has, you know, to do that. But that's going to be our responsibility now to begin to change that kind of mentality, especially in the Latin, and the not just Latino, but the immigrant communities around the nation, that we are not criminals, that we have protection under the law, and that we need to understand that the attacks that are coming from someone who is 100% criminal. So when he violates the laws, you know, he's violating the laws himself. He's the criminal. We're not the criminals. We have to change the mentality that we have as immigrants, and we have to begin to fight on the, you know, using the laws, and we have to protect our families by educating them and know your rights. But we also have to have a campaign where our members of the immigrant community, they register to vote, become citizens, and the workers that are undocumented today, they need, and we need to lead the fight to get them work permits. And that's what I think that's what we need right now. I think that they have to be legal workers and let them work.
Okay. We're almost out of time, but Jorge, are you seeing immigrant and undocumented community members, or are they afraid to go to work?
There's fear, no doubt, no doubt. But also there's a lot of education. We have been educating people. Tom Homan live declared that Chicago was a very, the border czar. Well, czar, we are not a, you know, a kingdom, so he should have another title. But he declared live that Chicago was a very difficult target because people knew their rights. Right. And that's exactly what we need, not to allow the administration to violate the law.
Okay, that's where we'll have to leave it. Best of luck to all of you on May Day this week. Thank you for joining us, Omar Lopez, Jorge Mujica, and Lorraine Targos. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, the future of the Endangered Species Act and what it means for Illinois wildlife. Conservationists say a proposed rule change could fundamentally upend protections for endangered species that have been in place for the past 50 years. The proposed change by the Trump administration hinges on a single word, harm. Our Patty Whetley joins us now to explain the proposal and what it could mean for Illinois. Patty, tell us what the administration is proposing and how would it change protections?
Right. So the Endangered Species Act is roughly 50-ish years old at this point, and it has kind of a laundry list of things that people, which includes corporations, can't do, actions you can't take against an endangered species. And those include things like kill, hunt, harass, trap, capture. And one of the things you can't do is harm. And for the past 30, 40-ish years, harm has been interpreted to include you cannot modify their habitat, you can't destroy their habitat, you can't degrade their habitat. The Trump administration wants to rescind the inclusion of habitat modification as part of harm, so that harm has to be more intentional, you know, injury. And so that would remove a species habitat protection. So someone I talked to said, you know, you can't club a manatee, but you could, you know, drain the sea that it lives in,
right.
Poison the water, poison the ocean, cut down the spotted owl's trees. So so that's what they're proposing.
If the rule change does go into effect, how could things play out here in Illinois?
Well, so Illinois is one state. Not every state has this, has its own Endangered Species Act. And the two kind of work in tandem, and they're very similar, but they do differ in some ways. And the Illinois Act does specify habitat. So if there was a ruling that came through, even if the federal government said an action was okay, it still would have to be reviewed by Illinois, which could then perhaps deny a development permit. So a lot of people think that because Illinois' law seems perhaps at this point stronger than the federal rule, that there might not be a lot of change or harm to come to an endangered species in Illinois. But Illinois has some gaps in its law, specifically as it relates to plants, where there aren't a whole lot of protections at either the federal or the state level for plants. And so folks who deal with endangered species are like, it's good to start talking about this now, even if we think that Illinois will protect its endangered species, we need to start talking about it, looking at where there might be gaps in the state law that you might need to compensate for something in the federal law.
I'm sure you'll keep us posted on how this plays out.
Yes.
Patty Whatley, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Patty's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. A proposal to expand police curfew powers goes before a key city council committee. Meanwhile, Mayor Johnson heads to Springfield and a financial reprieve for former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Heather Sharone and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, team. So let's start with that proposal to expand police curfew powers to limit what some are calling out-of-control teen gatherings. Here's a little of what Mayor Brandon Johnson and Police Superintendent Larry Snelling had to say on the subject on Monday.
We have not seen any substantive evidence that lowering the curfew is going to change that.
What we want to do is prevent violence. We want to prevent young teens who are coming down to wreak havoc on the city to not form up.
So, Heather, tomorrow a proposal to allow police officials to impose a curfew anywhere in the city to prevent these large gatherings of teens goes before a city council committee. What would this proposal do?
Well, if one of these teen gatherings happens, sometimes they're called teen trends, it would give the police superintendent and other officials at City Hall the ability to declare a snap curfew and give everyone 30 minutes notice to leave the area or face either curfew violations or citations. Now, this would be a dramatic expansion of the city's curfew power, which right now applies to everybody after 10 p.m. if you're under 18, 7 days a week.
Okay. Nick, the mayor and his handpicked superintendent, they don't seem to see eye to eye on this issue, really. Will that complicate efforts to win city council approval?
I think we'll have to wait and see what happens tomorrow, but as things stand right now, there is a significant amount of council support in the form of co-sponsors of this ordinance, such that it should pass handily, you know, and depending on how people end up voting on the floor, may or may not have a veto-proof, majority there. But, you know, you even heard Snelling yesterday expressing some concern about how this would be applied, saying we don't want to accidentally criminalize, you know, young people who just happened to get caught up in it and weren't part of these, you know, teen trends or teen takeovers. You know, I think the other thing we should be watching out for is just how quickly should this pass and be, you know, become, you know, part of the city code, legal challenges to this. There are a lot of folks who are saying that this pretty dramatic expansion of power may or may not pass constitutional muster. So I think that's going to be a key element to watch for going forward as well, should this, proposal advance in city council.
And Heather, we know the last time the city expanded the curfew was back in 2022. What happened then?
Well, it didn't really do much. According to documents I obtained from the Chicago Police Department, the ability to cite people who were between 17 and 18 for an extra hour on Friday and Saturday nights was only used a handful of times, maybe a dozen times, all of last summer. And all summer, there were only 300 curfew violations recorded, and only about 75 teens and their parents were actually cited for either repeat curfew violations or for being arrested on suspicion of committed another crime. So the curfew ordinance is not something that Chicago police use very often, and we'll have to see whether it would be an effective way of sort of tamping down these gatherings.
And as we've talked about before, the city already has policies in place to declare an unlawful mass gathering, the new policy that went in place ahead of the DNC, in which police officials said was very successful in, you know, allowing people to gather, ensuring that they stayed, you know, peaceful and, you know, orderly. And they, you know, they said after the DNC, this was a success. So it's interesting to see, you know, perhaps why not use this policy that's already in place rather than, you know, this expansion of existing powers.
And these rules are subject to sort of the approval of the independent monitoring overseeing the enforcement of the consent decree and the federal judge in charge of these reforms, because these are areas where the Chicago Police Department has had problems. We all remember sort of the George Floyd protests and calls for social justice. There were hundreds of complaints filed against Chicago police, and those rules were revised to give officers clear guidance on when to declare a gathering unlawful and how to disperse them.
The other thing that I think some older people have raised as well is issues about equity and how this is equitably enforced if that time should come. So I'll be really curious to see what some of the arguments are and how that plays out, Heather. Sticking with CPD for a bit, they unveiled the first draft policy governing traffic stops. What would it do?
Well, it would allow Chicago police officers to continue to make traffic stops based on minor violations such as an expired license plate sticker or a broken headlight that are otherwise designed to find evidence of other crimes. Now, I asked Police Superintendent Larry Snelling why he thought CPD should continue to have that power, and he forcefully defended that as a way to sort of prevent dangerous drivers and to keep the city safe. However, the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability disagrees with them. Six of those seven members believe those stops should be banned because they essentially don't make the city any safer and put police officers and Chicagoans in a dangerous situation, which we have seen all too frequently result in violence. So this is going to be a big controversy. I couldn't get Mayor Johnson to sort of tell me which way he was leaning, so this is another potential area of conflict between him and, as you said, his handpicked police superintendent.
No doubt you'll keep asking him that, Heather.
I sure will.
So, Nick, federal prosecutors, they say they are no longer seeking this $3.1 million from former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, who earlier this year, we all know, was convicted of bribery and conspiracy charges. But less than a month ago, the feds were explaining why Madigan should have to forfeit that money. What happened?
Well, there's not a lot of detail in the filing from federal prosecutors. They essentially say, we stick by our case, we stick by our arguments, but we are dropping this as a matter of discretion, independent of any other issue. We should also point out there is another issue in this case. Madigan filed, his attorneys filed a post-trial motion saying he should get a new trial. The jury didn't receive proper instruction. There were evidentiary errors. Federal prosecutors just today responding to Madigan's motion saying any errors that you can point to were not substantial at all, did not affect the outcome of the case, and should not, you know, grant Matt, the judge should not take this sort of extraordinary step of overturning, you know, the jury's decision and granting a new trial. But no longer will they be pursuing that, you know, restitution from Madigan. So we will see how the judge decides on those two outstanding motions.
So also, Nick, Mayor Brandon Johnson, he is in Springfield Wednesday hoping to get some financial relief from lawmakers. What is he asking for on this trip?
He's got a laundry list of some issues, you know, things like bringing back a tax on prepaid cell phones or phone minutes cards, better reimbursement rates for certain services that CPS provides, more money for the city's shelter system. They're looking to, you know, boost the sort of 911 surcharge on phone bills, which is an issue that State Rep Cam Buckner actually has supported and has successfully run a bill on in the House. But he's not really going after a lot of these big ticket issues. And as we know, there are plenty. I mean, there is the $1 billion the states that CPS says it's owed by the state. There is this looming transit fiscal cliff of $770 some million. There's the question of the Bears Stadium. But, you know, Johnson's asks are pretty limited in scope. And, of course, he has had limited success in Springfield with, you know, Governor Pritzker earlier this year expressing frustration, saying, you got to reach out and work with us more. You're not going to build relationships this way. And Pritzker's also pointed out this is very late in the game. A lot of the budgetary issues, you know, the sort of the bones of it are decided before the governor stands up and makes his budget speech in, you know, the beginning of the session in the wintertime at the beginning of the year. So, you know, the session is barreling to a close very quickly. So it'll probably be a big lift for a lot of lawmakers, especially those outside the Chicago area, to try and push for some of these measures that Johnson's seeking.
All right. Eyes on Springfield then to see what, if anything, they actually come back to Chicago with. That is Spotlight Gang. Nick Blumberg, I can say your name, and Heather Sharoun. Thanks.
Thanks, Brandeis.
We're back right after this. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Local stakeholders on the Governor Pritzker's budget proposal and priorities they'd like to see the state make. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandeis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm serving Chicago for 37 years.